All right, we're back again. It's the real dirt. Today's dirt, it's the Doug and Dave and Chip Show. I got Dave and Doug. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. I got Dave Malone from Green Dot Extract. Say hey, Dave.
Hey, Dave. It's Green Dot Labs.
Green Dot Labs.
All
right, not
all
to
the
be
same.
Confused.
There's a lot of green dots of the world. There's a wings shop. There's a credit card.
Let's not mention those people in your competition, right?
We are Green Dot Labs of Boulder, Colorado. It's very awesome to be here with you, Chip and Doug.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, man. And Doug Marvin from Botanicare.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, man. I see you got a bowl packed up there. What's going on?
Yeah, this is that triangle mints from Sea Junkie Genetics, the wedding cake pheno.
Yes,
I've heard about this quite a bit lately.
One of the most hyped strains in cannabis today. Everybody wants the cut, and rightfully so. It's a new one that we have brought into Green Dot Labs, and it's a very unique strain. I will highlight a few things. Is by the numbers, this strain has outperformed every strain we've ever run through our garden.
By the numbers, what do you mean by that?
So, in extraction, we see marijuana through a different lens than, say, the conventional farmer. In extraction, it tells you a lot more about the plant and its cannabinoid content, its terpene content. And when we see yields, for instance, this wedding cake phenotype, it pulled 32.5% returns on a full plant extraction. So we've seen lab results on this strain across the board from other individuals who grow it, and it always tests clear over 30% THC. It is just a true 21st century hash plant, polyhybrid. It's got the cookies flavor. It's got an OG flavor. It's got a sweet, creamy vanilla, and it is as oily as anything I've ever put my hands on.
It's
so
really hash flavor dominant, though, that hash plant flavor.
Absolutely.
As soon as you mention that, I can taste it.
Deep, oily, savory.
It's got the sour double in it, you know, which is basically a sour diesel back cross.
Right.
And
thin crystal, though. It's a thin crystal.
What's that?
It's this real small, thin crystal on it. I barely saw the nugget.
Oh, no, the heads are gargantuan.
Oh, right.
I'm actually a cannabis photographer as well, and I take very high-end resolution pictures of the strain. I will share those with you here shortly to let you see what she looks like very up close. But, it is without question the most essential oil-rich cannabis cultivar that we've ever come across so far. I imagine you will see this strain in almost every garden across the United States before it's all said and done. It's starting to have the Gorilla Glue effect, if you will, as when it first showed up on the internet, everyone wanted it. Now everyone wants to get rid of it because now it's lost its luster. But we think this is a little bit more special than the Gorilla Glue.
Yeah, I visit a lot of licensed commercial cultivations out there. And 2015, I think I-95 was probably the best thing I saw anywhere by far. And 2016, it was a ton of awesome I-95 crosses. And I think that Chem D I-95, the Chem de la Chem, was just something special. In 2017, I think it's going to hold this whole year. This Triangle Mints is amazing. I think it's a early number one strain of the year.
So you're calling it wedding cake and you're calling it triangle mints?
It's the seed line is called triangle mints. It's the triangle kush crossed to the animal cookies, thin mints cookies, animal mints. And this particular phenotype found by the breeder just got tagged with the moniker wedding cake. And to differentiate this one from, I guess, the rest of the packs, you may find this one.
Because it stacks up like a wedding cake?
It's just bling.
Frosty and beautiful and expensive looking.
Ginormous yields.
Expensive looking. Ooh, I like that.
It's very fancy marijuana.
So easy to grow. Nice. It's a stretcher?
She grows, has a big, robust cookies frame. I find the flowers out of the direct light tend to put on is what you would find in the forum cut.
Best way.
The ones on the perimeter of the light seem to put on the fatter buds. We did some in a dual spectrum using this 630-watt ceramic metal halide lights into flowering to see if we could boost some resin. And the jury's still out. I think, did it do any better or worse? It's certainly consistently good. And we know just by the numbers, we should just have our entire garden filled up with this strain. But as we all know, as connoisseurs, variety is the spice of life. You don't want to be absolutely smoking the same old stuff unless it's OG.
Or sour.
Or a good sour.
Oh, man. It took me a while to get caught onto OG Kush. And I met Josh years ago in the late 90s, right when it first started. Right? And he's bragging up his OG. And it took me a couple years to get on it. Right? And finally, like, I literally, like, bought an eighth for $80 or something. You know, nuts. And it was fucking great. Right. And, you know, and same way with diesel, right? I was like, oh, hype. And I saw some poor diesel because that's what you see mostly.
Sure.
And then I got the real deal and was like, sold.
It's transcendent.
Never look back.
Never look back. It's hard for me to see other strains, right, as good. But I love the cookies, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I love Urkel. I love old school strains for the novelty or the flavor of Panama or Thai or that Durban Thai High Flyer. Or that shit's all great. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, man, diesel in my pipe any day for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the timeless classic varietals that we've preserved over the years, your Kushes, your diesels. Every so often something new and revolutionary comes out. It's happening more and more. Actually, there's a lot more confusion now. The more people are growing more varietals and the polyhybrids are bottlenecking and funneling. It's a very cool thing to watch and be a part of, developing these strains. And now that extraction is, you know, a large part of the business in cannabis, we're able to really see this plant through the different lens and ways we would breed this plant now to have as much essential oil as possible, as much terpene content as possible. It's just a very fascinating things happening right here in Colorado.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting situation here, though, with the breeding and with the genetics, because of the way that you are limited about bringing in your gene pool, where other places you're not limited as much, right? And in the private market, right, people can buy and plant anything from all over. Mm-hmm. But in the regulated market, it's difficult to have genetics.
Absolutely. And this goes to the chicken versus the egg argument. When this medical marijuana first started in the commercial business, you know, well, obviously from the black market, there came all these new strains into the regulated market. And for a while there, the state would, you know, turn a blind eye to the fact that people are bringing all these new strains into the commercial market. Well, as of recently, the state has kind of squashed that in an attempt to gain more tax revenue. They like any new business to start up in this industry to purchase seeds that were made on the regulated market, which is a pretty hot commodity right now.
Yeah, there's only a handful of reputable seed breeders in Colorado. There might be several people doing it.
Right.
Right.
Right. There's very few in, you know, so you're left with options to bring in some clones, which are potentially infested with God knows what, and that could set you back years trying to remediate your garden before you start. Or if you wanted to buy seeds through the regulated market, you know, that's a wild goose chase finding those. However, you know, at Green Dot Labs, we were lucky to get in early. We have a lot of legacy heirloom strains that have been popular for, you know, decades even, and are becoming more and more popular because they're fairly exclusive. And you know, at Green Dot, we also have a breeding program where we're making our own strains at very high rates. Currently, we have archive that we've made since we've started, probably a good 100 to 200 strains. I have lost count, but we take a nice male from something and cross it to just about everything in the garden. And for a rainy day, someday we're going to break those open and see what's in them. But well, we're such limited in production right now at Green Dot. But that's all changing here in April when we will be going recreational. We have a new state-of-the-art cultivation facility that's going to open. We're shooting for April 15th, but there's always regulation issues that could go into that. But if we're lucky, April 15th will be Chapter 2 of Green Dot Labs. It's been a quite an exciting ride.
Is that recreational dispensary, recreational manufacturing?
Well, we are just cultivation and extraction only, and we wholesale our extracts to dispensaries across Colorado. So we do not have a retail position.
So you're going to open up more of the market.
More cultivation. You're right. More cultivation, and we're building a brand new lab concurrently. So that may be about a month behind our cultivation center, but it's going to be much, much larger than what we have in far, far more advanced, and we are really going to open up the genetic exploration in that building. We have breeding stalls built into it.
They have a actual photo booth, an area for doing professional photography.
Oh, excellent idea.
Very excellent. Nice touch.
Right. Good job, Dave.
That's one thing you can't see on the radio, but we do take very, very beautiful high-end macro shots.
We'll make sure we get some photos and put them on the website.
All right.
So under this episode, people can download photos of Green Dot.
We'll put up some beautiful shots of this this wedding cake that we are enjoying right now for you guys to see what we're talking about.
Yeah, Dave's photography is really, really awesome. I should probably give a shout out to Professor P. He helped you kind of get into that.
Yes. He's from Portland. He has Dynasty Genetics. And
another very reputable, awesome breeder.
Mm-hmm.
A big time fan of Chris. He's such a great person, and he came out and showed me the ways of photography. The first time I saw his pictures, I just couldn't look at other weed after seeing his beautiful pictures and how elegant and how defined they were. It really took my appreciation of cannabis to that next level, being able to capture these intimate macro shots, these families of trichomes and stuff the naked eye just physically cannot see.
Yeah, it's a whole other universe.
It's a different world there. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I've been lost in the camera lens for sure.
People see these pictures from other walks of life and they have no idea what it is. It's just
I've had people say, is that from outer space?
Yeah. Is that the Great Barrier Reef or something? What is that?
So what kind of rig you shoot?
I have a Canon 6D with all the bells and whistles, a 65 millimeter macro lens. You know, probably 2 years old now, but it is top of the line.
And you're shooting a ring flash?
There's a ring flash on it. We have a light diffusion tent.
Oh, sweet.
It's about $15,000 worth of camera equipment.
Totally.
You know, the end result, these photographs, they are just, they're stunning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just like such high def. Like there's that thing that you have that takes multiple shots, like over a very short distance.
Right. So this is a stack rail. And what this is you'll take a picture and then you'll move it up maybe like 2 microns. You'll take another picture, go up 2 more microns. And what happens is you have a series of about 25 photographs that then you will run those through a photo stacking program on your computer. And what it does is it finds the highest data points of concentration. I hope I said that right. And it layers them over each other to give this almost three-dimensional image of the flower or the trichomes. It almost looks three-dimensional and seamless. If you have it done just right, it's just an amazing photography.
Totally.
Some of the highest quality you'll find in any industry, whether it's marijuana or National Geographic. It's up there in the upper echelon.
Yeah.
Technology is just... It's amazing these days what we can do and what we can see.
Which is really cool. When you started taking those shots, you could see what was in those trichome heads and the size and stuff like that. And you guys have done a lot of work with...
So something that's very important to us in extraction is the trichomes, the diameter of the trichomes. You look at all different varietals. You have some with stalks and tiny heads. You have some that have giant bulbous heads that are closer to the surface. And, you know, we've kind of traced that back to the hash plants that are now infused into almost every varietal that we use today in American cannabis. You know, and to not underscore how important those hash plants are from the Middle East regions, your Lebanons, your Afghanistans of the world, and what those have done to the entire landscape of cannabis hybrids, it's where it all began.
They were bred for hash production for hundreds, maybe thousands of years.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Literally. Thousands of years.
Yeah. Thousands.
And those genetic markers have been passed down through these hybrids that we've made and Dutch breeding, American breeding, and to always trace back. You find a plant with giant voluptuous trichome heads, you can pay homage to the people before you who made this possible. The little tribes, little villages up in the Hindu Kush mountain regions.
Yeah.
These guys are, Every day we thank those guys for the work they put in to enable us to, you know, carry cannabis as far as we have.
Man, I think that is an incredible way to enter our first break. Let's pause for a minute.
Okay.
And thank all the people that have come before us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. We would not be as great without you.
We know the grower's independent. Do it yourself. He's educated in raw materials and believes in his own technique. He puts faith in his abilities and takes pride in his yield. We know that growing is complex science that requires blood, sweat, and tears and humility. We care about the environment and our place in the world, the abundance of yield, the quality of our product. We embrace getting dirt under our fingernails. We are investing in the future of the earth. We are cultivating abundance and legacy. Grow quality, grow consciously, grow and prosper. Go to growers.com for more information and where to buy our products. Growers is locally owned and operated in Denver, Colorado, and has been manufacturing soil for over 15 years. We make a consistent and effective line of soils and nutrients in an environmentally conscious way. All right, we're back. Doug over here just keeps breaking out the weed. I like that. I'm going to have you over more often, Doug.
Right. No problem.
Yeah. This is good for you.
He's expensive, though. I'm warning you.
We were kind of speaking about this earlier, how much the environment's changed between cannabis producers and manufacturers and hydro store suppliers, equipment suppliers. Now we can all be friends.
Right? Yeah. It's a whole new world out there.
It's a whole new world. In the past, me and Doug might not be able to associate with Dave because we're from the equipment side of the industry.
We're the straight-laced side.
And Dave is, he's from the plant side.
Right.
A little less politically correct side.
Yeah. I mean, even you remember some of the maximum yield trade shows where people were like asked to leave for weed associated booths or smoking weed. And that wasn't too long ago, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Retail stores that had signs that said, camera phones at the time, smartphones were not allowed in the store.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, right.
No pictures.
Right. Yeah. It's changing fast. So Doug, you work for Botanicare, one of the leading nutrient hydroponic equipment manufacturers in the indoor horticultural industry.
Right? Pretty crazy, but that's accurate, right?
Like in our store at Cultivate Colorado, and I would say probably in any store in the country, Botanicare has to be your number one seller or almost your number one seller.
We're probably top three
in any store, I would say. The only time it's not, I would bet, if there's some like distribution issue where they can't get your product. So they, you know.
Well, probably not that. We are available in three different distributors in the U.S. Well, technically four distributors in the U.S. We have some sub-distributors.
Totally. Everybody can get your product.
Right? Pretty easy to get Botanicare.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. In the past, it wasn't like that. You had to search out for stuff.
Yeah, 20 years ago when we started the company, Trig Bradley, one of the two founders, he spent a lot of his time just on the road, you know, and he spent the majority of that time on the road up in Northern California.
Yeah,
totally. And
that's where I met him years ago, 2002, 2003, 2004, something like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Again, yeah, 20 years for us, 20 years for myself too in the industry. But
before Botanicare, there was literally General Hydroponics, mm-hmm. right? And that was
20 years before that even.
And for 20 years, they literally dominated the market. And then Botanicare, Treg started his product line in 96, 7, something like that, right?
Yeah, I think, outside of the Arizona market, you could probably say 98 was, you know, when you could, right. it was around, you know,
I guess
CalMag.
I was cutting edge. I heard about it in 96.
Yeah, cutting edge was
talking about it back then.
Yeah, slightly before us. Yeah, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Awesome brand, by the way.
Oh, I didn't mean to confuse John Piccarelli from Cutting Edge with Botanicare in 1996 being a cutting edge product.
Oh, cool.
That's what I meant, right?
For sure.
Because they were the first major brand that had botanical extracts and organic mixed with synthetic nutrients.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, bio-mineral hybrid product, you know, I guess you could call it. You know, it was CalMag and Pure Blend original way back in the day. Everybody knows CalMag. So,
yeah.
You know, the CalMag then is pretty close to the CalMag that you have today. You know, there's like one of the major things was when iron was added, but Pure Blend Original, it was actually our first product. And in my opinion, to this day, is still our best product.
Yeah, Pure Blend Original, great product.
Yeah.
I don't sell so much of that. It's mostly Pro in my shops, but Pure Blend Pro.
Yeah. So, right. You know, in the whole hybrid thing I was saying, bio-mineral hybrid, we took the Pure Blend Original and combined it with some mineral salts, and that's what Pure Blend Pro is.
Right. And that's it works so well. I sell so much of this product. It's
what I personally use. The guys over at Green Dot's what they use. It's a true connoisseur level base nutrient, no doubt about it. Any grower would probably agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's used it.
Absolutely. The thing I really see about it is the uniformity to which you get product out of it. Like I can tell when it's grown with Pure Blend.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, it has a look and even a smell and a taste to some degree.
You can put 100 flowers in front of me and I can pick out every single one of them that was grown with the Pure Blend.
Would you say because they have a consistent smell or that they just bring out the magic?
I think there's a color that comes out with it. It has a specific color that it gets. And then it does have a smell, but it's that, man, if you're in a soilless medium, then it becomes this uniform smell.
Right.
But if you have some local dirt or something, then it changes.
Yeah, right. What I feel is Botanicare, it's like a multivitamin that can really help you achieve the full genetic expression in that, blowing out its calyx, its terpenes, its resin. It's just such a well-rounded, lean, healthy diet for the plants.
When the plants are grown with, you know, that Pure Blend Original in the Pro, they're just so healthy the entire grow.
Right.
So I agree with what Dave said. It's the plants just really firing all cylinders and you get the most out of the plants.
Right.
Right. You get a little bit of mineral, a little bit of biological.
That's the sweet spot in cannabis. If you look at commercial viability, I mean, obviously you want to grow the biggest plants with as much resin and terpenes as you can. But there's a fine line. Going full organics, we've seen historically that yields can be diminished, and going full mineral salts, some of its essence is diminished. So there's a sweet spot somewhere in there between. I feel that the Pure Blend is really, really dialed into that. And once you've, you know, found out the ways of how Botanicare products can help your plants, it's hard to go back. And, you know, I've seen cannabis all over the world. And I've
talked to a lot of growers that, you know, after using Botanicare, did you know, rightfully want to try other stuff, see what was out there. And
yeah, absolutely.
But we have a pretty high rate of return.
So customers.
It's like a good rate of return, though.
Right, absolutely.
Not the bad kind.
Right. As a consumer, you walk into a grocery store and see all these flashy new products, and to the inexperienced mind, it's like, well, I should pour a little bit of everything in my plant, and then my plant will be just, you know, Godzilla
kitchen,
of wheat.
Kitchen sink recipe.
The more, the better.
Absolutely. Right. The more, the better. Look at all these. You can put all these crazy products, and then keeping it simple, staying with your fundamentals, it can take you so much further in cannabis.
You know, Botanicare, we have a lot of products, other products as well. But, you know, I go around telling people to run our base nutrients strong and rely less on supplementation. And, you know, Pro is one of those things that, you know, you throw in some other stuff, some other organic methods or, you know, other teas and microbial inoculation, a really small, teeny tiny bit of carbohydrate. You know, you don't need a whole lot more, really.
Right.
Right, right.
CalMag.
Pure Blend has it all.
Yeah, yeah.
So this does kind of sound like a Pure Blend commercial, and I guess it kind of is for a few reasons. One, I sell a bunch of Pure Blend at my job, right?
Go buy it.
Doug here, he promotes Pure Blend all over the country. And Dave, he grows with Pure Blend products. And he's also sponsored by Botanicare. And this is something that's a little different than has gone on in the past. We were alluding to this earlier. Is Botanicare, they're, you know, one of the major companies in the United States over this, just bought out by
Hawthorne Hydroponics.
Hydroponics Group, which is a how do you want to phrase this? Who are they?
Well, Hawthorne Hydroponics is a wholly owned subsidiary of Scotts Miracle-Gro, and
which are one of, if not the largest home garden companies in the world.
Yeah, no doubt. On the lawn and garden side of the industry, not like the mm-hmm. big ag side, extremely high percentage of that entire market. Like,
right.
If memory serves me correct, it's like 80, 90% or something substantial.
Right. So you guys are literally could be considered the biggest people. And let's make this a sports analogy. You're Nike and you're Michael Jordan.
Yes. That's exactly right.
That's pretty good.
Okay. And you sponsor a Botanicare sponsors Green Dot with product, and there's research and development, and
yeah,
right.
Well, I mean,
it's just like a shoe deal,
without a doubt.
It's just like a shoe deal.
Been friends with Dave for a really long time, and we've talked a lot of cultivation over the years, and helped each other out with becoming better growers, and no doubt that.
I'll speak to it as it could be developing to be a two-way street, in that we were able to collect a lot of data using these products. And being able to send it back their way, see what changes they have, you know, R&Ding new products that are not on market yet. So I guess the idea is our brand continues to grow, and more success we achieve using their products will help them, you know, make better products and have higher sales. That's kind of, the end game here.
Treg ran the company for years. You know, he never settled for standard the standard quo. He was always looking at improving on everything that he was doing. So it's definitely good to learn from all these experts out there. Dave, obviously one of them.
Yeah.
And John.
Expert. He's yeah. smiling over here.
He's Michael Jordan.
No.
He's Michael.
You called it.
Michael.
Doug is Phil Jackson. He has literally taught me a lot of
the... Phil.
Doug has taught me so much about the plant and the way these nutrients, what they're actually set out to do. Before, a home grower is just this recipe that I had that was working. I couldn't necessarily articulate what was happening because there was so many variables that I was unaware of. And Doug has been instrumental in painting that full picture so that as we apply these products, there's actually reason and purpose other than for the sake of just tweaking the recipe.
Right. I mean, there's some really great growers out there. And what I've always tried to do is really just tell them, you know, what was in the product. And, you know, not just, I would say most everything is to my knowledge, everything is listed on the label, but just letting these guys know exactly what's in the products and why we put it in there. And it makes using the product and adding whatever else you need, you know, a whole lot easier.
That is a problem in our industry, is full disclosure. People do not, companies do not put everything that's in the product on the label.
Right. There are some circumstances where certain things that are in these products are not recognized as being plant beneficial.
Yeah. Humic acid, linardite, all that shit.
Yeah.
Right?
So if you put it on the label and it's for a plant specific product, they don't really like that.
Yeah. Right. Man, it looks like you paused in your packing up abilities, dude. Why don't you pack it up?
I really am. I'm about to leave, dude, if you don't pack that bowl.
Totally. We'll use this moment to take another break. Cutting Edge Solutions is leading the cultivation industry in hydroponic fertilizers. I've known John, the founder of Cutting Edge, for over 20 years. He's an expert horticulturalist and a truly great dude. I truly stand behind his products as a wholesaler and a retailer. I see that all of the growers that buy his product are truly satisfied. As a grower, you know when a nutrient line has been developed from extensive research in real farms throughout Northern California that it's for real. Cutting-edge products are always fresh, alive, and never dehydrated. They specialize in soil biology and plant health. Check out their website at www.cuttingedgesolutions.com. For more information about their full line of products, including additives, hydroponic nutrients, hum tea, Sonoma Gold, and beneficials, and great, great feeding charts. Hey, if you ever see John out in the hydro store, chat him up. He'll talk your ear off about how you're growing and the complexities of his product and plant health. Thanks, John. All right, Doug has passed me a freshly packed bowl of the sour dub. So we're all cannabis connoisseurs here. I think that's what unites us here. We've met pretty much through cannabis connoisseurship.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, we have a lot of mutual friends.
That are also cannabis connoisseurs.
Right. Kind of weird right. How that works out.
We speak in pot, which is from the outside world, a foreign language. When you get a bunch of people who really know how to articulate the subtle intricacies of cannabis, they start speaking their own language, and you can snuff out a rookie immediately in a conversation because we love this plant and appreciate it on so many levels. And to be able to express that to each other, it's a very cool way to communicate with somebody with similar interests.
It's fun. It's fun, you know, being a geek.
Yeah, totally. It is nerdy, isn't it?
You know?
I know. My wife and her friends will laugh at me and some of my friends over the conversations we're having, you know. Like, oh, your fungal content isn't nearly high enough in your actively aerated compost tea.
People,
the hierarchical relationship between.
Are you going to add mycorrhiza
nutrients
in that?
They're just glazed over, like, oh my God. Happens all the time.
Like, oh, it smells fucking awful. What is that? But, you know, we all love weed, the three of us, and it goes beyond just like enjoying smoking it or getting high, right? There's this quest that I believe all of us are looking for is the knowledge on everything about whatever strain's in front of you, right? And the thing I enjoy the most is that there are so many different aspects of cannabis that we can talk about. We can talk about, like, you know, the economy of it, which fascinates everybody who's ever smoked a joint. We can talk about growing techniques. We can talk about genetics. We can talk about the science of, the medicinal application of, the extracts of.
The politics
right?
of.
The politics of.
Endless.
The growth right. patterns of, right? Like, you know, the genetic relationships between things. Right, and it's such a huge, complex subject. Anyone who discounts cannabis, and I'm sure that's none of our listeners here, right?
It's just weed.
I'm preaching
man.
To the choir here, like they just like, it's just weed. Yeah, it's just weed.
It all smells like a skunk to me.
Yeah, it's far more complex. Far more complex.
Right, and as more varietals come to market, in your experience, to really be able to, you know, talk about and decipher what makes this strain different than the one before it. It's an endless conversation. You can be as creative as you want in talking about cannabis. I could sit up here and talk about my three favorite OG Kush varietals for 2 hours.
Let's just talk about them for 2 seconds. What are they?
Well, let's just go right to my number one favorite, probably strain that if I were to take into a deserted island, would be the Underdog OG or the Lumpus Headband. There's always a lot of controversial stories about OG Kush varietals and where they came from and a lot of chest pounding. I stay out of that stuff. I just appreciate having them and being able to grow them and provide them to medical marijuana patients throughout Colorado. I just check my bags at the door right there. But of all the OGs, that the Lumpus Headband, to me, for whatever reason, it might just be the novelty of having it because it's so rare and so exclusive.
No, that's just good.
It's amazing.
That's just good.
It is one of the most potent strains without question. It tastes and grows as good as any of its, siblings.
Yeah, I get you on the controversy of it because, people are like, oh, it's not this, it's not that. And I don't really care if it's great.
Yeah, it's a great strain. You can call it whatever you want to call it. The name is arbitrary to me.
Because if it's not good, it doesn't matter what the story is, right?
OG Kush is just good, period.
Just OG Kush.
You know, when you take a flower out of your jar and you crack it open and the essence hits you in the face and then...
Yeah, at ADSI last year, the underdog was... in the competition from Jeff, Mr. Dank.
Yeah, totally.
And, out of all those strains, I was one of the competitors. And of all the strains that were there, you just knew which one the underdog was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
And ended up taking second place in the competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're talking strain that's 20 plus years old.
Yeah.
Right? And it's clone held strain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's got some legs on it, man.
Does.
I mean, that whole era in the early 90s produced some really, really great weed, man.
Amazing.
Amazing. Dog, Underdog, Sour, Diesel.
Yeah.
These are the American heirlooms.
Later on, OG Kush, Bubba Kush.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That whole era, I mean, it's what got me into collecting. All these amazing genetics were just coming out, and it was obvious way back then that the preservation needed to happen.
Right.
And that's when I started, 96, right then, doing my collecting.
It just brings up the funny conversation. At a point in time, Americans were like, oh, all Dutch weed's the same. It's your skunk, your Northern Lights, and your haze, and any which combination you can put it in. Then you step out of the American culture and look at what Americans have done. They've taken Sour Diesel, OG Kush,
same thing,
and cookies, and crossed them together so many times that my head's spinning now.
Wasn't it the Phylos? I think I have this right, the work that those guys are doing on the checking the markers, the genetic markers, and trying to find out how many unique parental strains there are out there. And I think I have this correct that there was six total. And so everything that we have in modern cannabis today, other than the Landrace stuff that's coming over, but maybe even those actually, that there's six total parents. And then it's pretty amazing to think that you get this much variety out of just six total things, if that is a true accurate representation. And then the next cool thing, sorry, I'm kind of nerding out here.
No, that's right. Totally nerding out. What are the six things?
There's in their galaxy, they show five that are kind of in the same kind of general vicinity. And then you have this one outlier way out here.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's the Durban poison.
Oh, the poison, really? Yeah.
Pangaea, when the land masses shift. A strain that was once an equatorial strain is now growing up at 8,000 feet in Pakistan.
Yeah.
Over years, evolution has made these plants morph. They've
that
started producing.
That one cut was on this side of the crack when it separated.
And land started moving, and this is a survivor species. It's a weed, and it lived for centuries and centuries, God knows how long. But over the years, what once used to be an equatorial sativa now is growing up at 8,000 feet in Pakistan. It's got more condensed resin. It's got a shorter profile. It's got skunkier terpenes to deter animals from vegetating on them.
I'm sure it has things in the plant that do something to us specifically. Look how attracted we are to the plant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's co-evolutionary issues right there. Well, humans have this instinct for intoxication. And, some people deny it, some cultures deny it, right? But, we want to get high.
Yeah.
We want to alter our consciousness.
Yeah.
Right? And it's been going on for a millennia, right, since before we were humans. And it's something that we do, right? Mm-hmm. Let's embrace it, bro.
It's good.
Right? It's a good thing.
It's fun. It feels good.
It's also medicine.
100% it's medicine.
Whether it be anecdotal or physical medicine. I mean, people use it for different reasons, and
it's gone past anecdotal now. There's
there's undeniable evidence out there that it is, but for someone, who just wants to increase my appetite, to have my choices be go see a doctor and be prescribed all sorts of pharmaceuticals or self-medicate with cannabis.
Go from 50 seizures a day to 5 a month. That's pretty medicinal.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, man. It just blows me away that there is still this denial of medicinal qualities, right, of cannabis.
It boggles the mind.
And it also blows me away that there's still the same stigmatism of heroin and cannabis or opiate and cannabis usage together still exists today when, man, if you know a junkie, they don't want to smoke fucking weed.
Oh, no.
They want dope. They want opium. They might smoke weed with you, but like that ain't what they want.
Right.
And you know, people who like weed, they don't, you know, like, nah.
Yeah, I don't think
I want to smoke any heroin.
Right? I'll pass.
I mean, sure, there's lots of like overliers, right? Because like, man, there's going to be 10% of the people that just want to get fucked up, and they're going to take whatever drug
they can get their hands on,
legal or not. And that's just how it goes, man. But most of us are not like this, right?
No, we're just
they're not like that.
Obsessed with cannabis.
Well, I think that, you know, I think a lot of people, even if they're on the other side of the fence, once they actually try it and they get something that's nice, like well grown and cured and healthy, and you know, I think when they have the opportunity to sample that a pretty high majority of them, I think, would have a favorable.
A little anecdotal evidence here, and I came to Colorado in 2008 around to start some hydro stores, Cultivate Colorado, and I remember driving around by the Capitol building and there being hundreds of people out there smoking crack, prostitution, dealing drugs. You guys remember this shit? It was fucking nuts,
100%.
Man. Right? It was nuts. Yeah, the hill.
Yeah.
And that is gone now.
It is.
That is gone.
Right?
Actually.
It is gone now. And you don't smell crack walking around Denver anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Downtown Denver. Right? And you smell weed.
You smell weed everywhere. Right.
And so I've always believed this, that if you give people the choice and they need something to really alleviate the pain or the isolation or the depression or whatever that they have in their sorrows in their lives, they're going to choose weed. Because, you know, it really is so much better for you. And, you know, people understand that. But if you don't have that choice, you want that escape, you're going to take what's in front of you. Right?
I think we're past the tipping point to where, you know, these kinds of conversations are going to be less and less. I think more people are going to be smoking weed than ever before.
Yeah. Oh, it's happening right now. Demand has increased.
Public opinion, political climate across the United States, outside of the federal government,
Germany,
potentially,
Germany.
Worldwide. Yeah, you're seeing political climate ease towards marijuana.
Look how conservative Germany is, and even they are doing it.
Yeah, right. It's really sensible. That's for sure. There's so much money associated with it. There's so much economy associated with it. I mean, it is the number one job grower in Colorado. Right.
Something like 20,000 jobs.
It has gone from 8,000 jobs to 15,000 jobs to 20,000 jobs year after year.
I read by year 2020, there will be more marijuana jobs in the United States than in all manufacturing combined. This was something put out by Forbes magazine, I believe, last week. They're just talking about the exponential growth of this industry. It's a very, very exciting thing to be a part of.
Doesn't even count the ancillary.
Absolutely.
We're talking probably like 150,000 jobs, really, with all the subcontractors and everybody.
Yeah, because it, you know, I've said this over and over again. I'm not sure if we cultivate cannabis or cannabis cultivates us.
Right.
And this is a great way to illustrate it. It's like, Dave, you go get your medical producer's license, let's just say. And you're you know, growing medical cannabis and extracting it, right? That's what you do, right? That's your business. Well, you had to go hire engineers, architects, lawyers, accountants, bricklayers, cement people, you know, building people, electricians, plumbers, consultants, advisors. It's huge. It balloons.
Government.
Yeah, we are millions of dollars deep in this new cultivation facility we're building, and all the ancillary economies that are benefiting from cannabis. You really hit the nail on the head, and it goes so far and so deep, from nutrient manufacturers, construction engineers, architects, scientists from all walks of life who came into this industry with intellectual property that we have now benefited. Extraction technology makes astronomical leaps every year. As soon as we buy the latest extraction machine, by the time we start doing our first run with it, there's already a better model on the market. It's moving so fast. It's fairly frustrating, but.
Right. Man, I find your story fascinating, Dave, and I want to talk a little bit about it.
All right.
You started a legal extraction company in Boulder in what year?
This is 2013 is when we started. So we're a little over 3 years in.
2013, shoestring budget.
Shoestring budget. Yeah. We did not have nearly the capital we thought we would need to get started. We were bootstrapping by all definitions of the word. I mean, we had no money. We were eating ramen noodles, just trying to get to that first harvest and make that first sale. It was a very scary time for myself and my family because we had no idea, was this ever going to work out? And, you know, getting licensed took twice as long. Everything was twice as expensive. We just really felt demoralized for a while, but we all believed that we would be able to create something very special. And we've certainly persevered and have grown and have just infinite opportunities to keep chasing this dream that we had when we first started the business, my wife and myself.
So back in 2013, way back 4 years ago, everybody was open blowing, right? And what that means is they were packing these tubes of some sort, glass, metal, plastic, whatever, with weed, right, with cannabis,
correct,
and then blowing propane or butane through it,
correct,
and then collecting the runoff of that, evaporating the propane or butane, and left was the extract,
the hash oil,
and you were one of the first people to set up a closed loop system.
Sure.
And not only did you set up a closed loop system, but you also really promoted how much better those systems were and started talking about contaminants in other people's products.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it really pushed you to the forefront of the extraction movement in the area.
Absolutely. When we first started, everyone was open blasting, and we knew it was a very unsafe thing. I have friends who have been burnt up or gotten in a tremendous amount of trouble for doing that. And we knew there had to be a more controlled way to do this. And as such, when we first started this, the first time I tried hash oil, I'll back up to this story. I knew the first time I did a dab that this was going to be the next revolution in cannabis. the feeling I had, it felt like the very first time I smoked marijuana when I was 14 years old. And it brought back this euphoric feeling that I just had forgotten existed. at that time, I was in no position to want to start a hash business, but as years went by, I'm talking about this is 7-8 years ago,
yeah, right.
9 years ago, even, I don't even know. But when it came time to decide what kind of marijuana business we wanted to start, you know, we had the conventional method of dispensary grow model and then extraction. There's different types of extraction technology, but I knew that there was something to butane, and this was an emerging market where these manufacturers were putting together these closed loop butane recycling machines that you'd be able to extract and not off gas butane. That pretty much instilled a vision in my head that we need to do this indoors and we need to do this very safely. Well, how do you do that? You have to work with a bunch of very intelligent architects, engineers, and industrial hygienists, people who've been working in the pharmaceutical industry, for example, and have designed systems with a high level of ventilation and low environmental impact to design a system for us to extract marijuana indoors. So we got our first closed loop machine. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. Once we started learning how to make hash oil and how to refine it, how to get rid of all the butane left in the product and develop, you know.
So you guys don't just have regular extract, though. Let me say this. Anytime that this stuff is released, it is sold immediately. It is not easy to get on the shelf. You have to know when you guys are selling it, because your wholesale distributor, you sell it to your retailers,
retailers,
so to speak.
Correct.
Right. And like some days people release it on certain days.
Sure. So,
right. And it is a line out the door and it's gone. So this isn't just normal extract we're talking. Dave has excelled.
Right. And you know, there's a lot of contributing factors to the success that we've experienced in extraction. And when this whole thing first started, I just wanted to grow weed. That's what I had done previously. That's where I have the deepest connection to this business. I just wanted an opportunity to grow weed for a living, and that would, my life would be perfect. I mean, it certainly evolved a lot from then, but the things that really make our extract special is the variety of strains that we have and the quality of those strains. What we have seen in extraction as the market is maturing is that a lot of our competitors, I would say, are all operating within 1 or 2 degrees of variance from what we do on the extraction. There's you really operate under standards in extraction. And what that means is there's one way to make a good concentrate. It's called the right way. And anything you do to deviate from that standard, which is unlike cultivation, you can skin that cat many ways. In extraction, you do these series of steps exactly the same way every time. Your outcome should be the same every single time.
And that's why you can have brandable products so much, you know, better, easier with extracts than you can with flour. Because people, it's hard to consistently grow.
It's extremely difficult
over and over and over again, right?
Borderline impossible to have within 1 degree of variance in your crop than it is with extraction. I mean, there are so many more variables
exactly
at play.
Exactly the same, tastes exactly the same every time.
Mm-hmm.
Formula, process, recipe,
yes. Everything. So you know, these are just, you know, some of the things. I think our crew over at Green Dot, these guys are all just dedicated to the craft. They come in and they learn every single day. They bring up new ideas of ways to get our plant to express its true genetic potential and to, you know, evolve the medicine that we've conventionally made to make it even better and make more of it. I couldn't be more proud of our crew and how hard and how dialed into the craft every day. These guys work with a great deal of passion. It's not something you see in a lot of places.
So you're building a new facility. You spoke about this earlier. Can we talk a little bit about
this? Sure, absolutely. It's been sort of a long time coming. You know, we're up in Boulder, and that's where we started, and we still currently have a medical cultivation facility. It's fairly small. And then we have a dually licensed extraction lab, which services both the medical and the recreational side. So now we're building a much bigger and a much nicer cultivation center.
How many lights is this going to be?
It's going to be about 200 lights total.
200 lights.
Yeah, and this includes a very cool lighting schematic that enhances the resin and terpene production in plants, offering a very broad spectrum of light. We're really bringing a lot of technology into this facility that, you know, maybe stole a page or two out of the Dutch agriculture and the way we feed plants, fertigating them, irrigating, the very tight environmental controls we can put in our plants to stimulate more resin production, because that is our bottom line. We need plants that can bring the bacon, so to speak. You know, not all cannabis is created equal. You know,
lots of technology,
automation. I think that we're going to have
environmental control,
the red strains.
We haven't even gotten there yet, right? Doug, you see places all over. You probably go to more grow rooms than, you know, than most other people in the industry. I know. I've seen a lot. I bet you've seen more than me now.
Well, 20 years. 20 years is a long time.
Yeah, people invite you into your grow room. It's your job. Let's talk about this technology revolution we're having right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt. I get to go visit a lot of people in a lot of different markets and kind of see, how people are doing things. Technology wise, no doubt about it, Colorado has had some advantages that allowed for more of a free market, I would say, and therefore, I would say slightly higher innovation from that.
They've been able to hire architects, chemist, light engineers, plumbers, you know, everybody that the private industry were always scared to hire.
Right.
And they were the first to really do it. Right.
Totally. And then you have a place like Oregon, and Oregon, it's all 100% about quality. And so you have a real serious, like the growers out there, they it's less of a job and more of like a life
craft
for them. Right. You know? And then you go up into Washington State, and those guys are probably the best at knowing how to run efficiently because they had to. If you wanted to survive, you had to be able to sell at the wholesale prices up there where they had cultivation separate from retail.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have vertical integration here, and you can kind of do
one. You have a little more margin here in Colorado. However, as prices do continue to watershed, as more players get into the game, and more product is saturating the market, you really start looking at your cost to grow marijuana. And labor intensity is probably your number one cost in most cultivation centers. They have a lot of people running around doing things.
Is that what you see?
No doubt. If you look at anyone's total expenditures and when you're pretty much doing most businesses, but especially cannabis.
Labor-intensive.
Very, very labor-intensive, high percentage. And then California, like what I would comment on California is that they got like the hype game down. You know, everybody out there knows how to, you know.
They've been selling weed for a
long
time.
There are a lot of big fish, and so you have to be even bigger fish, mm-hmm. right, to even survive in California. So, yeah, it's tech-wise, no doubt about it. Colorado feels like the tech hub.
Right.
I'm
definitely one of the late adopters with technology. I'm a hippie at heart. I like to do things artisanal manner, do it with my own two hands. But as you get into commercial production, you really have to look at the labor intensity. That's just one feature that I'll be able to hang my hat on in the new design of our facility is the low labor intensity. We're looking to create very high level jobs and take the labor components out of it, automating all the labor components of production from planting a seed to extracting the essential oils out of the plant. There's a tremendous amount of space to automate, and you achieve a higher level of consistency doing this. There's so many, besides the basic economics of it, to go this route.
What do you think the range of cost of production per pound are?
Well, in Colorado, what we have seen, it can be up to $1,100 a pound indoor. I mean, I've seen people who are already gone belly up going $1,500 a pound.
You know, not counting the excise tax out here, you can see anything from what I've seen is $300 to $1,100. Most of the operators are in like the $800, maybe $900 range.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it's volume game. We're talking volume game.
But those margins are coming down on everyone. There's certainly some downward pressure as prices deflate, that people start looking at.
People are getting higher yields.
Yeah, how do I get higher yields?
This technology boom has definitely increased higher yields. Yeah,
decreasing also electricity, that's a huge expense.
Absolutely, your cost, right?
I won't name names because it's like, you know, he's got. This
no first names, man. No first names.
No. But there's a guy in Denver who I visit a lot of places, and he has put together the smartest indoor grow I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And without giving away his total tech, he's basically using natural gas as like his input. And then from there, he reuses a lot of the byproduct throughout his entire process. And he's been able to get his cost indoor down, not including the excise tax, somewhere depending on where he hits on yields, because it's a brand new facility. Somewhere between $200 and $300 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's the price that now you're in the greenhouse industry price, but yet indoors.
Right.
Pretty cool.
There's a great incentive to grow in a greenhouse and, you know, not leaving a great carbon footprint. Unfortunately, our industry is still, indoor cultivation is relying on these high intensity lights that consume a tremendous amount of power. This HVAC equipment that just doubles down on that. And some would agree that it's a somewhat unsustainable growth model for this industry. Well, there will be a next revolution in indoor farming is when some brainiac from NASA comes through with this spectrum plasma light or this LED light that uses the same amount of power as a light bulb on your lamp. that you can now grow 4 pounds of marijuana using that amount of power. It's going to happen. And when that does, the incentive to go into a greenhouse is going to go away, and it's going to come back to the indoor cultivation, because not going to say there's not nice greenhouses out there that are sealed and very well controlled and operated, but indoors in a concrete building,
it's easier to do.
It's easier to do.
It costs a little more money, but it's easier to do.
Correct. You have tighter environmental control, and that means make it or break it for a lot of businesses in this industry. As the market matures, regulations increase. You have to pass microbials. You can't have all these diseases and stuff. And people struggle with that in greenhouses. People struggle with that in indoors. It's a it's an ongoing threat to our, you know, our industry is these pests. And so technology is increasing so much every day. It's I would encourage everybody to start embracing it. And this is coming from someone who's the last to do so.
Right. Absolutely. Here in Denver, we've seen gardens like started in 2008, 2009, you know, and the gardens started last year. Right. You see this all over the country, especially let's just talk straight
Gen
about
one.
Indoor. Gen 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm. Gen 1,
you
2,
know.
And 3.
Right. Are you seeing conversion? Are you seeing people like realizing they have to change their cost? So they're changing
There's
out from
There's still a lot of Gen 1
technology.
Gardens out there.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Most of those are paid off. They are, you know, doing their thing. You know, they're well-oiled machines.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get something specific. But no doubt that the additional testing requirements and price, you know, the wholesale price went down. Was it 36 or 38% in the last 12 months?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
In Colorado. No doubt that most of the money now is going to, for sure, efficiency, which I would consider like a Gen 3, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Gen 2s were the guys... Big warehouses, tons of DEs, you know, like huge HVAC, like just super badass that would put out awesome results.
Mm-hmm.
But now really, really smart stuff is starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which brings the cost down, the consistency up, no doubt about it. And that's the name of the game. You are running a business. You better have some consistency.
You better think about this. I say this time next year, if you're not able to run your entire grill on your iPhone, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You missed the bus. I mean... Because the bus is here and the bus is about to take off. And a lot of these, unfortunately, in my opinion, a lot of these first generation grows are going to start feeling that pressure.
Oh, yeah. When you're making 1 pound or less, because that's reality, right? One
uh-huh.
pound or less per light in Gen 1, right? Even in Gen 2, you might get a little bit more, but like, you know, it's really your cost.
What I'm most excited to see, and like, I totally agree with what Dave said about the indoor and just how it's super awesome. But one thing I'm most excited about is now I'm starting to see some fully sealed, completely environmentally controlled
greenhouses. They're amazing.
Absolutely.
Are putting, you know, the plants are growing under the sun,
mm-hmm.
the best grow light that will for sure ever be invented.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I'm a greenhouse.
There's
guy
no question.
You know, by heart for sure. Sun grown, you know, I've always felt like that
so
was the
good.
Best way to do it. And mm-hmm. when you hit it right, the flavor is there. It might have a different color.
Sure.
Right. But that's just incredible, man, when you hit it right.
Yeah. Sun grown's.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, and I've said this over and over again, though, like, well, greenhouses, there's walls and you have a heat bill. So
mm-hmm.
that's indoor,
mm-hmm.
right? And just if you just think about it like it's indoor, right, and build it like it's indoor, put lights in it like it's indoor,
Correct.
Heat it, cool it like it's indoor, man, that shit is bomber and you cannot tell the difference.
Oh, I know.
Right? And yeah. and it'll actually be better, and that's how you'll mm-hmm. tell the difference. Like, oh god.
30-60% reduction in cost to operate, and you can
mm-hmm.
get up to, you know, 200-300% increase in yields grown under lights.
And there's no question. You can certainly capitalize on the sun in certain times of the year. However, in the wintertime,
yeah,
these same greenhouses, they're as expensive to run or more expensive than an indoor grill with better
true.
Insulation.
That's true.
I mean, you got your heaters running around the clock. Your lights are on for most of the day. Yeah. You know,
That's something I've seen so many greenhouse manufacturers push this, like, oh, you can flower every month. You can flower every month. You can grow all year. And you can, but like when you come off those just macking harvests of October,
right,
when you've just crushed it, it's hard to get that
December
crop, the February crop that's even, it just pales in comparison.
Right. That's kind of cool. You got some variation. It is a different yield. I think also like a different, the plants are just a little different. Something a little spicier about them in the winter crop that I like.
Well, if you light it, it still looks incredible.
Yeah.
Right. But just like Dave said, it just costs you more money. You got to run the heater. Right, all the time, and that's a bill right there.
Which is why,
I see a lot of greenhouse farmers, boasting about their low cost per pound. I'm like, well, is that for one season, or is this an average over a year? They do the average over the year, and it's like 50% higher. They're like, oh,
some of the stuff I've seen, the guys have implemented thermal heating and cooling.
Oh, absolutely,
that's where it's at.
Absolutely,
doing light assisted, all of a sudden with the heating and or cooling costs of sealing up the greenhouses mitigated. And then at that point, those guys are crushing it year round.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's really easy technology. You've probably seen some of this stuff. I've seen some in Northern California recently.
Been around forever.
Where they literally just dig a trench like 6 feet down. Right, 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches wide. They line it with pipe, and then they just like zigzag it back and forth over their greenhouse surface, and then they just duck in and duck out, and it just cools down the air.
It works.
It works.
Stabilizes the air temperature, so you push out like 56 degree air on one side, no matter what you're pulling in on the other side year round. Yeah, right. It's pretty incredible. And it's so low tech.
It's very smart.
That's what I'm most excited about.
It's so low tech, man.
But I'm also extremely excited to see all the Gen 3 stuff, like Dave's and some a few other guys.
Right. It's going to be a total iPhone grow. I mean, it's going to be the thing you saw
and dreamed about in High Times and
some McLaren F1.
It's the McLaren F1 of cultivation facilities. And we've put a tremendous amount of time and effort and thought and brought in professionals from all different walks of life to really dissect how these new instruments will play together. And, the goal is to be able to achieve a level of consistency that you year round that you don't really see in this industry. I mean, you always see people with good crops. You see our current facility. Some crops are just better than others. You know, it's a kind of a first generation grow. So the outdoor climate, because we're exchanging air and odor mitigation, that it has an influence on your plants indoors, and in certain seasons outdoors, our plants are better indoors. It's kind of the nature of the beast. So with all the technology we're throwing at this facility, we're on paper, we should see Southern California temperatures year round in there, and it would the outside influence won't make any difference.
80 degrees.
Just beautiful. Awesome.
Are you guys projecting any yields per square foot, or do you guys do that really?
Well, so like I said, through extraction, we see things through a different lens.
Right.
We don't really so much care about how many grams of flower per watt. We're looking at milligrams of cannabinoids and milliliters of terpenoids per square meter. And what that means is, how do you stack certain varietals under a certain light to maximize your yields and extraction? Well, first, you have to have good genetics. So that's your first thing to cross
genetics,
off the list.
Genetics.
That's right. And then you have to understand the way your plants grow. Some plants grow vertical, your OGs and cookies of the world. Some plants grow wide. And learning how to maximize that footprint with plants that are very rich in essential oils. And then the third component is stimulating this essential oil production. So you're using lighting schematics. You're using a diet, environmental controls to stimulate the plant's defense mechanism, which is to put out as much resin as possible. So that's kind of the way we break it down. We look at yield in extract per light opposed to how many grams of flowers, because I'll tell you, 1,000 grams of OG Kush is not the same as 1,000 grams of Blue Dream. I mean, you I see this all the time in dispensaries, is these dispensaries have their top shelf. You can buy OG Kush for 30 1/8, or you can buy Blue Dream for 30 1/8. You don't really realize how much more medicine you're getting by buying that OG Kush than that Blue Dream at the same price point. We see this in extraction
because of the terpenes.
Well, no, because of the essential oils. Because OGs, we'll get a 25% to 30% return in extraction. As to where your Blue Dreams, we're getting 15% to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
That 10% difference is a big deal economically.
Yeah,
looking
absolutely.
At this, so we know that these more potent hash plants produce more oil, which is our bottom line.
So it's not weight of flower per square foot; it's extraction.
Weight of extraction per square foot.
Yeah, wow.
So
yeah,
we had, awesome. So yeah, and there's different ways to achieve.
You know, you're kind of like those brandy makers, right? You're like, you know, growing the best wine, you know, growing the best grape to make the best wine to turn that into brandy.
Right. Yeah, you can draw so many parallels from the alcohol industry into cannabis. You know, your flowers would be the beer, and your extracts would be, you know, your spirits, maybe your craft cocktails, any number of different things. And it's incredibly fascinating to see how far extractions have come. You know, currently right now the latest trend is this product called the high terpene full spectrum extract. It's a alphabet soup. So there's two ways of doing this. What you're really looking to do is in an extraction is to capture the essence of the plant and get rid of everything else that would be a byproduct. And the two things that we really want on this plant are the cannabinoids and we want the terpenoids. In my opinion, the rest of the plant, unless you're juicing it for the antioxidant properties, it doesn't really pose much medicinal value. So to make the ultimate extract, in my mind, is to preserve 100% of the terpenes on the plant and 100% of the cannabinoids, and then homogenize those two and filter out every other impurity, such as your lipid, your plant waxes, your cutin. These are the things you don't want. And I feel extraction is kind of sitting at a plateau right now. This high terpene full spectrum extract is a perfect concentrate. It's a true bottle of the essence of the plant. I actually brought some for you guys to check out. It's extremely fragrant. The flavor on it, it's just superior. You'll be able to taste a dab of this for 10 minutes after you try it. The potency's all there. We've captured all the cannabinoids. We were able to use cryogenics to filter out the lipid component, and now we have pure extract.
Pass it over
here.
I've seen this stuff before. So this kind of brings us back to that conversation we were having earlier off air. Is one of the reasons that you guys are sponsored by Botanicare is so that you can see the resin production on the opposite side.
Correct.
Right? Because most people are only concerned on yield. Most growers, that's their number one thing. When you walk into a room, they say how much you get. Wow, this is just open and it smells. You know, they, yeah, right?
That's,
right.
That's
every
the
grower,
cheese.
That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that's the whole success of Botanicare has been that it just made everything so much more, such a huge bump in terpene production, flavonoid production. Your cannabinoids, really, it goes back to that comment earlier that the plants are just really healthy, and it's a result. So a lot of guys that are doing extraction or a lot of guys that are doing breeding, people really focusing on like that full plant, that full spectrum, like gravitate towards the Botanicare.
We're over here sniffing hash while you're talking. Like, what were you saying, bro?
I kind of felt like I was talking to myself.
You kind of were. So,
you know,
absolutely. And we kind of said that earlier. Is like the Botanicare product does bring out this flavor, this smell.
It does.
Consistency.
And one thing that we're able to do now with the advanced laboratory analytical stuff is we're able to now quantify what we used to be able to qualify. And what I mean is, you used to be able to pick up some hash and smell it and say, that qualifies as good hash. Now we can send this to an analytical lab, break it down into individual terpenes and cannabinoids and collect a tremendous amount of data that now we can feed back to the manufacturers of these products to help us stimulate the more to increase. You want to see a linear growth from where you started using nutrients and accelerate.
Which is why I like that fresh frozen, you know.
Absolutely. That's a great technology there.
It just has like everything that Mother Nature put together.
Right.
And it's like highest concentrations.
You know, fresh frozen.
That's what this is.
This is fresh frozen, right?
This is all fresh frozen.
You harvest, you cut the weed down and freeze it immediately.
Correct.
In whatever manner you might choose.
True. Right. Yeah, you want to, you know, go People well below zero.
Right.
Get it really cold, break it up really fine.
Get it real cold.
Turn it into dust, extract it, and filter out everything in behind. And the refining technique, which I'll kind of skirt around a little bit, is the process called the high terpene. We're able to evaporate all of the butane out of the product, which is the solvent we use for extraction, and leave behind nothing but the pure medicinal essence of the plant. And it's just the most popular product.
Is there any good reason not to? It seems like the full fresh frozen is like so superior in so many ways.
Cost of production so much lower even.
Right? Yeah. You eliminate the trimming, you eliminate the drying
process.
What's
the big reason not to do it? Is there some extract that
these reasons for not to do it are being met by the manufacturers. When we first started, the reason not to do it was because if you put 1,000 grams of frozen material in your column, you're only able to, it's 80% water, so you're actually only filling it 20% of its capacity. Mm-hmm. As to where you fill it with dry material and you do the same extraction, you know, time is money. And when you can extract 1,000 grams of dry material and yield 200 grams of concentrate,
huge difference in,
opposed to yielding, you know, 100 grams of concentrate, whatever the number may be, there's a big difference. So manufacturers of these extraction machines heard the plea from people using the machines. Well, let's make a bigger machine. Well, there you have it. Here we are today where we can make the fresh frozen live resin high terpene full spectrum extract.
Yeah, say that again.
High essence.
Fresh frozen high terpene.
Yes. This is alphabet soup, pot nerd.
The highest concentration.
Glaze you over kind of talk here. But we keep assigning these names to these products.
Oh yeah, we get to make them up. You get to make them up right now.
We do.
Yeah.
We have
What's the acronym of that one?
We have a trademark.
Does it go by an acronym?
What's the HTFSE?
Yeah.
And then there's HCFSE, which is a high cannabinoid. So what's happening is you're separating the terpenes from the cannabinoids, which are now solid. It almost look like a like crystals or big granular pieces of salt. And the terpenes are more have a lower viscosity and they're they just like look like something liquid. It's just an incredible, beautiful sight to see and smell.
So beautiful.
So we can separate those two and offer them as separate products and sell just the terpenes or sell just the cannabinoids, or you can homogenize them. And in my personal opinion, the homogenous, so you take the separated components, you blend them together, and then every single dab is exactly the same. It's consistent. You're not getting more terpenes or more cannabinoids. It's straight down the center. And I believe that's the true essence of the plant in concentrate form. You're able to experience, you know, the lowers, the less developed flowers with the top colas and everything in between, rinsed off the plant, homogenized.
Full plant medicine, bro.
It's everything.
Full plant medicine.
Keeps them coming back, I'll
that's
tell
what
you.
It is, literally.
It is, though.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. Full extract.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's such a like, oh, I want to make it the most pure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But this is beyond that. Making it the most pure.
Then we make a big mess with it.
And then you make a big mess.
You're growing with like the most pure lights, the full spectrum lights. Uh-huh. And then you're feeding with like the most full spectrum diet. And then you do the fresh frozen and you get the.
Just capture it
all.
This is the pinnacle. In my opinion, this is the apex. This is what it all comes down to. And to do this with a wide variety of strains is where the real magic is.
Mother Nature, you know.
It's variety.
No, we're developing these genetics. We're trying to just capture as much of their genetic potential as we can in every single run. So, you know, weeding out inferior plants, breeding two alpha plants together and just their progeny is even better than both parents. So you discard the parents and keep developing these genetics till you have just pure showstoppers in extract, like the most irresistible, delicious concentrates that even if you do not like cannabis whatsoever, you cannot put your nose up to there as a human being and say anything but wow.
Can I see one of those again?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Both of
after
these
that,
are wow.
I have to look again.
Both of these are wow, man. Yeah, wow, that's great, man. You know, I talked to a lot of extractors. Most of them are interested in the chemistry of it. You come from the grower side of it, and you know, we're always smoking buds together, and many of the other extractors, it's just like extract only.
I'm a flower smoker. I mean, I consume extracts one out of every 100 times I consume cannabis. It's not that I don't love them, I just prefer flower. I prefer an extract in a social setting, where people are enjoying, you know, pairing with a meal or doing something really cool like that. But for personal consumption, I personally enjoy smoking flowers. I enjoy growing flowers. It's just what side of the fence that's the cloth that I was cut from, so to speak. But I am more than fascinated with the extraction side and advancing that as much as we can. But the heart and soul come from the cultivation. That's the one of the driving forces of Green Dot Labs. You got to grow it. You got to grow it well.
Starts with the seed. Right.
Got a room full of cultivators here.
Yeah, man.
I think we all agree.
Cultivate.
That's something you will know about extractions. You can only polish a turd so much. It's poop in, it's poop out. And that's just kind of a general rule of thumb, an inside joke of all hash makers. It comes down to the product that you're extracting these days.
Yep, absolutely.
And that makes by far the largest difference in a quality extract and a not quality is how much TLC those plants saw throughout their life cycle.
Yeah, man. Well, man, this has been an incredible episode of The Real Dirt. I feel like we got some dirt here today. We got some dirt on Botanicare. We got some dirt on Green Dot. We got some dirt on technology. We got a little glimpse into the future on how we think that things may lay out in the future. And, man, smoke some great weed.
All right.
Yeah, man. I think we should call this episode over and break out that dab rig I got over here.
Turn it up.
And
who can do the hottest dab?
Hot dabs with Dave.
Low temp dabs, bro.
Better watch this guy.
Low temp and no temp. Doug has fallen victim to my shenanigans.
Mischievous. Got to watch out.
Well, I'm lucky the Real Dirt Studios isn't far from my home. So
yeah, you should be safe.
great home, by the way.
Thank you, Chip, for having us.
Thanks for coming, man.
Awesome. It's
been
a great
time. It's fun. Yeah, you guys are welcome to bring your hash and weed here anytime. Smoke me out.
Always.
It's been a pleasure.
Awesome, guys. Thanks.